This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
Stay tuned for our bulletin of church news, which will be followed by Panorama, and then our feature, Culture and Society. We shall close with the news for young people. I am John Baptist Tumusime. On Thursday, Pope Francis received an audience members of the Focolare movement on the occasion of the 80th anniversary of its foundation. The movement, also known as the Work of Mary, was founded in the Italian city of Trent by the late Chiara Rubic on December 7, 1943, in the middle of the destruction caused by the Second World War. Ever since, it has been guided by the spirituality of the gospel values of unity, love, and peace.
In questi 80 anni, avete fatto risuonare questo messaggio.
The Pope expressed appreciation to the Focolare movement for carrying out the gospel message in the last 80 years to young people, communities, families, people of consecrated life, priests, and bishops in different social environments, including schools, culture, the media, ecumenism, and interreligious dialogue. You have thus been an active instrument of a great flowering of works, initiatives, projects, and above all, of rebirth, of conversions, of vocations, of lives donated to Christ and to our brothers. Today we want to thank God for all this, the Pope said.
Seminate, per favore, unità portando il Vangelo.
The Holy Father invited the members of the Focolare movement to work for the realization of a fully synodal and missionary church, starting from their communities, by encouraging a style of participation and co-responsibility in them, guided by communication and sincere dialogue. He also invited them to remain faithful to the charism of their movement, which derives from the gospel values of unity, love, and peace. He encouraged them to sow unity so that Jesus may be good news for everyone, and to continue to be sowers and messengers of peace in our world, still torn apart by many conflicts. Earlier on Thursday morning, Pope Francis had received the new ambassadors of Kuwait, New Zealand, Malawi, Guinea-Conakry, Sweden, and Chad to the Holy See, who presented their credentials. In his remarks, the Pope told the new ambassadors that they were undertaking their mission at a particularly troubled time, marked by major outbreaks of armed conflict, and noted that conflicts are caused by grave injustices. He noted also that today's challenges require a multilateral diplomacy whose aim is to provide effective responses to emerging problems, and invited the ambassadors to play a role in the search for solutions that not only prevent and resolve conflicts, but also consolidate peaceful coexistence. Pope Francis reiterated the Holy See's interest in environmental protection and its concern about the effects of climate change, which hurt most the vulnerable members of society. He prayed that the United Nations Conference on Climate Change COP28 meeting in Dubai may come out with concrete solutions to the challenges our planet faces. The Bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Butembo, Beni, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, the Right Reverend Melchizedek Paluku, has called upon election observers who have been accredited by the government to ensure that the general elections scheduled for 20th this month are free, fair, and transparent, and to be objective in their assessment. Bishop Paluku was speaking on Tuesday in Butembo. Congolese voters will be electing members of the National Assembly, members of the 26 provincial assemblies, and for the first time under the new constitution, members of municipal councils. Reiterating the call last month by the country's bishops' conference, Bishop Paluku reminded the election observers that the credibility of their observation would determine whether the results are accepted by the winners or rejected by the losers. Reports from Ghana say a court of law in Accra has sentenced a Chinese national to 4.5 years in prison for illegally mining gold in the country. The culprit Aisha Huang was also fined $4,000. She had asked the court to impose a fine and deport her. Reports say there are many Chinese nationals in Ghana who are involved in illegal mining and have destroyed not only large areas of forest, but also polluted water bodies and sometimes encroached on concessions of large-scale miners. Several Chinese nationals were brought to court for similar cases in 2021 and 2022. You are tuned to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
Police in Sierra Leone have summoned former President Ernest Bai Koroma for questioning as part of their investigation into a failed coup attempt on the 26th of November, the country's information minister said in a statement on Thursday. Mr. Koroma is invited to report to the headquarters of the Criminal Investigations Department in Freetown within 24 hours, Chernoba said. The former president has issued a statement saying he will honor the invitation and call on the public to remain calm. Gunmen attacked a military barracks, a prison and other locations in Sierra Leone last month, freeing over 2,000 inmates and killing more than 20 people in what the authorities said afterwards was an attempt to overthrow the government. Mr. Koroma condemned the attacks in a statement shortly after they happened. The government said the failed coup was led mostly by the former president's bodyguards. So far, 71 people have been arrested in the context of the ongoing investigation, including 45 serving military officers, 7 serving police officers and 13 civilians, according to the information minister. The president of Seychelles declared a state of emergency on Thursday after a huge blast at a depot for explosives on the main island Mahé, as well as flooding that has claimed the lives of 3 people. The explosion overnight in the industrial area of Providence, southeast of the capital Victoria, caused massive damage to it and surrounding areas, President Vavel Ramakalawan's office said in a statement which ordered the state of emergency. Seychelles is a collection of islands off the east coast of Africa with a population of just over 100,000, with more people living on Mahé. Much of East Africa has been hit by heavy rainfall and deadly flooding in recent weeks. The authorities in Mali say dengue fever is on the rise, with hundreds of cases reported in the West African nation. The Director General of Health and Public Hygiene, Dr. Sheikh Amadou Tidjane Traoré, told the Associated Press on Wednesday that his department has counted 21 deaths and 600 cases of the disease as of Monday. He said dengue fever is also present in Burkina Faso and Senegal, and that there is need to raise public awareness. Dengue is a viral infection spread by mosquitoes that mostly cause flu-like illness. In severe cases, it can cause joint pain, swollen glands, bleeding and death. There is no specific treatment, but 2 vaccines have been recommended by the World Health Organization for countries that suffer regular outbreaks. You are tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
And now, our feature, Culture and Society. Climate risk insurance is one of the topics being discussed at the United Nations Climate Change Conference COP28 in Dubai. Some of the most adverse effects of climate change are long droughts and floods. Drought is a prolonged dry period in the natural climate cycle, characterized by the lack of rainfall, resulting in a water shortage. According to the Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, about 55 million people, majority of them in Africa, are affected by droughts, which kill crops, livestock, increase the risk of disease and death, and force survivors to migrate. Similarly, floods caused by excessive rainfall have had devastating effects, which include loss of human life, damage to property, destruction of crops, loss of livestock, the deterioration of health conditions due to waterborne diseases, and damage to the infrastructure such as power plants, roads, and bridges, as well as disruption to people's normal lives when their economic activities are either destroyed or come to a standstill, and when they are forced to leave their homes. Many times when such weather extremes occur, thousands of people are left without food security and have to depend on the charity of others or on humanitarian assistance. One of the humanitarian agencies that help millions of people threatened by hunger in the world is the United Nations World Food Programme, the WFP. The agency has sent delegates to the United Nations Climate Change Conference, COP28, in Dubai, to urge political leaders to take climate change more seriously and to support and fund policies aimed at tackling the issue of hunger caused by weather extremes. Geno Laganda is the agency's Director of Climate and Disaster Risk Reduction. He explains the key causes of hunger in the world today and more.
There are three key drivers of hunger. The first one is conflicts, then we have climate extremes, and then we have economic shocks. And climate shocks such as droughts, storms, floods, heat waves, they cause increasing losses and damages to the systems that produce food and that bring it to people's tables. But then we are equally worried about lower level climate variations and stresses. They play a role also in chronic hunger. So we're talking about irregular rainfall, changing seasons, rising salinity in soils and groundwater, shifts in pest infestations, heat stress in livestock. So all these things are making households more vulnerable. And in such strained conditions, chronic hunger can then turn into a life-threatening acute situation very quickly, even when smaller shocks hit. So the second element that does not necessarily get as much airtime as the climate disasters is the climate stresses and the less visible impacts. And then there's a third pathway through which the climate crisis drives hunger, which is via displacement, social tensions, and conflict. So climate impacts, they aggravate resource scarcity, they displace people, and that can then fuel social and political tensions. Once these tensions erupt in violence and conflict, then people become extremely vulnerable and unable to manage any other risks in their livelihoods. So when you look into top 20 countries that are currently classified as the most vulnerable to the effects of climate change and the least able to adapt, then more than half are in conflict. And in these countries where we have people that experience both climate shocks and conflict and violence, then hunger is most severe there.
In the paths that you mentioned, those problems that exist, are there solutions? Are there any innovations out there? And is there a way to implement those solutions?
When you look at the types of solutions that you find in WFP country programs, then there is one important element, which is about anticipation and preparedness. Most climate disasters are predictable. The science used to forecast them is increasingly reliable. So if we make effective use of forecasts, risk analysis, early warning information, then it is possible to put in place the actions and the financing that's needed to act before a climate disaster hits and not wait until people are already in life-threatening situations. So when a particular weather forecast tells us that a climate hazard is about to hit, then we aim to release early warning advisories, cash transfers, and other services in partnership with governments and local partners. And with these resources, vulnerable people can prepare for these shocks and mitigate their impacts. Another element that's important is financial protection and risk sharing. Not many people know this, but WFP is the one UN organization that applies climate risk insurance solutions at scale. So far in 2023, we've connected 5 million people with climate risk insurance solutions and services in 26 countries. And in areas affected by droughts, floods, and storms, insurance payouts have already benefited 500,000 people. So there is not only an immediate opportunity to go to a bigger scale with these insurance solutions, there's also an opportunity to strengthen the capacities of governments so that they understand which risk financing solutions work best in which countries and which contexts. And then lastly, I would say what's really important in the current state of the climate crisis, we need a surge in locally led climate change adaptation and disaster risk reduction projects. In WFP, for example, we have worked for decades with community-based resilience programs, which help to restore degraded ecosystems and infrastructure, help people adopt regenerative farming practices, increase natural resource efficiency. And over the past 5 years, these programs have rehabilitated around 1.7 million hectares of land, which is now not only delivering local adaptation services, but also global carbon benefits. So those are the three elements that I would mention: anticipation and preparedness, ramping up financial protection, and then locally led disaster risk reduction and climate change adaptation.
You mentioned insurance. Could you explain a little bit more how this insurance works? Is it some kind of public-private partnership with the participation of the WFP, the international organization? What kind of instrument is that?
There are two types of insurance that we work with. The very first one is micro-insurance, which is when a smallholder farmer household is the insurance policy holder. And just like we can distribute cash or food or vouchers, we can also distribute insurance coverage in our large community-based resilience programs. The second type of insurance coverage is then where WFP itself is buying insurance against catastrophic drought events, for example, through an instrument that's called the African Risk Capacity, ARC. Last year, when I count both micro and macro insurance, these insurance protection has reached 3.8 million people in 21 countries. And alone through this ARC replica program where WFP has purchased insurance, then following failed rainfall seasons in Mali, Burkina Faso, the Gambia, these programs have triggered $15 million in payouts, which we have then implemented as early food and cash assistance. So this has then basically complemented the public funding for emergency response with insurance-based mechanisms and thereby reduced the humanitarian financing gap that we're facing. Microinsurance is really, I would say, a long-term contribution to de-risking food systems. So if a smallholder farmer has access to insurance protection, then they also have better access to financial services. They have a different savings behavior. They can take more risk, for example, switching into different crop types, diversifying crops. So this is more, I would say, a longer-term adaptation investment. If we work with sovereign insurance and if we make climate risk insurance products work for the humanitarian sector, then we can really crowd in additional financing, private sector financing, into what is otherwise a publicly funded humanitarian response system. So this is in a slightly different space. This is where then we try to address this element of usually not enough funding being available after climate disasters to meet all the humanitarian needs that are out there. But it's true. I mean, there are existing solutions. We need to tailor these solutions to the different risk contexts.
COP28 climate conference. What deliverables do you think this conference can bring for the further advancement of such solutions and many others in order to mitigate the consequences of climate change?
Greater commitments for climate action in fragile and vulnerable settings. We have had decades now where the temperature curve has really kept climbing. Adaptation financing was often too little, too late. And so many communities on the front lines of the climate crisis now find themselves in this era of loss and damage. They do not have time until we have phased out fossil fuels, until we have more adaptation funding available, until we have reformed multilateral climate funds. So these communities are now facing clear and present danger. And it's a matter of being hit by these climate extremes in a few months from now and not just a few years from now. So for us, a big metric at this COP is whether we see clear commitment to ramp up climate protection for the most vulnerable people in the most vulnerable settings. And this can be measured also by a better balance in climate finance allocations and climate finance flows. The loss and damage fund that has been negotiated this year through the transitional committees, we hope that this fund will be operational. At the same time, for us, the litmus test for climate justice is in protection at the local level. So it is not enough, I think, to transfer funding from one country to another. For us, the metric for climate justice is protection before lives are in danger and before the international humanitarian system needs to come in and help save lives. So we hope that this loss and damage fund will be established. We hope that it focuses on fast, locally focused action in order to protect the most vulnerable.
Geno Laganda, the Director of Climate and Disaster Risk Reduction at the World Food Programme, speaking there to Anton Yupeniskay of the United Nations News.
And now, news for young people.
Hello and welcome to the program. I am Festus Tarawali. Children from some of the countries most affected by the climate crisis on Wednesday spoke at an event at the COP28 climate summit taking place in Dubai, in which they urged world leaders to act fast to tackle climate change. The young people from Africa and Latin America made an impassioned call for political leaders to stop gambling with their future and commit to finances and policies that put the world's 2.2 billion children first. The future of children is in danger, said 13-year-old Revan Ahmad from Libya. We are here to defend our future because climate change is not caused by us. It's caused by previous generations, but we paid the price and are still paying the price, Ahmad said. He mentioned the floods which devastated the Libyan city of Derna earlier this year, killing over 11,000 people. He said, last year, I went to COP27 to talk about what could happen with climate change. This year, I'm here to talk about climate collapse, citing the loss of life and devastation caused by Storm Daniel in his country. Vanessa Nakate, a 27-year-old Ugandan climate justice advocate and a UNICEF Goodwill Ambassador who opened the event, said, every year of my life, there has been a COP, and every year, world leaders have failed to acknowledge the special needs and vulnerabilities of children in the climate crisis. Meanwhile, 13-year-old Lova Renee said her home country of Madagascar has been hit badly by climate change and that children are severely affected. In Madagascar, we have a drought and many children don't have water, don't have food and end up dead and don't have hope, said Renee. Francisco Vera, a 14-year-old from Colombia, called out the hypocrisy of rich countries failing to fund climate action. Pope Francis, in his written address to the participants at the COP28 summit read on Saturday, urged world leaders not to postpone action on climate change any longer, but to craft concrete and cohesive responses for the well-being of our common home and future generations. May we be attentive to the cry of the earth. May we hear the plea of the poor. May we be sensitive to the hopes of the young and the dreams of children. We have a grave responsibility to ensure that they not be denied their future, the Pope said in his prepared remarks, read on his behalf by Vatican Secretary of State, Cardinal Pietro Parolin. The Pope continued saying that it is up to this generation to heed the cry of peoples, the young and children, and to lay the foundations of a new multilateralism. A new document by the UN Committee on the Rights of the Child, published in August, said children have the right to a clean, healthy and sustainable environment, and governments must take urgent action, including the phasing out of fossil fuels and the transition to renewable energy, to guarantee this right. The guidance, known as the General Comment No. 26, underlines that states can be held accountable for environmental harm occurring within their borders and beyond. UN News' Bessie Du spoke to Aniva Clark, a 17-year-old climate activist from Samoa and member of the Children's Advocacy Team, which supported the consultation process. Aniva explained why the guidance could make a huge difference for young people worldwide.
Every single country in the world is a part of the Convention on the Rights of the Child, except the United States. And so that means that pretty much majority of the world has to comply with the regulations that the committee puts out. And so with them putting an official general comment outlining children's rights to a healthy environment, it will enforce sort of these governments to recognize that not having a healthy environment is compromising the future of young people, and therefore encourage them to take action into protecting the environment before it's too late. And I also think that the resources that is also created, such as the charter, are creating young people to also have an understanding of how general comment is helping and protecting their future, because often when these global decision-making methods are being done, the young people across the world will not be able to understand it or not have a proper comprehension of how it's going to benefit them and their future. And so I think that the resources, the toolkits, and everything that has gone into making general comment as big as it is going to make a huge difference.
That was Aniva Clark, a 17-year-old climate activist from Samoa and member of the Children's Advocacy Team that supported the consultation process on the new guidance on children and the climate crisis. She was speaking to UN News' Bessie Du, and that's all for this edition of News for Young People. Till the same time next week, I am Festus Tarawali.
You have been listening to the English Africa service of Vatican Radio, and I am Johnny Baptist Tumusime. In our next program at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature, Development and the Economy. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.